The views, information, or opinions expressed during the Seeds of Wellbeing series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of the University of Hawaii, College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources, or funders, and any affiliated organizations involved in this project. Welcome to A Seeds of Wellbeing, Voices from the Field podcast, featuring voices of Hawaii agriculture producers for Hawaii agriculture producers. These podcasts are made possible by a grant from the University of Hawaii, College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources, also known as CTAR, and the Seeds of Wellbeing, or SOW Project, and is supported by a grant from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, National Institute of Food and Agriculture, and the Hawaii Department of Agriculture.
In this episode, we aim to address some of the common legal questions raised by the Hawaii ag producers we have met. We are grateful to Kat Tashner, co-founder of the nonprofit Business Law Corps in Hawaii. At a recent meeting with the University of Hawaii's Ag Connect course, she addressed a number of questions she often hears and agreed to share an edited version of that webinar here. She discusses topics like legal structure, liability waivers, contracts, online taxes, where webinars and templates for common legal questions are available for free, and how to sign up for a free 30-minute call to address specific questions.
My name is Kat Tashner. I'm the co-founder and vice president of the Business Law Corps. So we are a nonprofit organization that provides free legal services to small businesses and entrepreneurs. And so as you graduate out of the Ag Connect program, as you move into starting your own businesses, think of us as a resource. I put our website on this slide. And so if you go to our website, we have a bunch of resources. Among them are free legal forms. So if you decide that, okay, you know, I'm ready to start up on my venture, I really want to do an LLC, we have LLC forms for you that you can download. Obviously, we recommend tailoring them, but it at least gives you a flavor for what kinds of information you should need. There's also information on how you can apply for free legal services. So every week, we have 4 30-minute consultations. So you can make an appointment through either MCVL or HTDC, and I dropped the links there. But then you can just talk to an attorney for 30 minutes about whatever question you have. Like, you know, here's my specific situation. Do I want to be an LLC? Why would I form in Hawaii if I live in California? Or, you know, whatever questions you might have that are specific to you, and you have a 30-minute window to just go nuts and ask whatever you want. That's probably a good resource as you start kind of feeling your way through choice of entity, drafting contracts. If after that 30-minute consultation, you decide, okay, I actually need help drafting these documents, I need more than just, you know, a 30-minute phone call, we also have an application for free legal services on our website. And so you can kind of say, this is my business, this is my idea, these are many people I employ. No, I can't pay for a lawyer, but here's what I need. And then we can try to match you with one of our volunteer attorneys. So those are resources that I wanted to drop. And I'll send a copy of these slides so that you can access the links after, but a good resource to have up front. One other resource I wanted to share before I dive into things. When COVID happened, a lot of businesses had to stop. And so we wanted to create kind of a library of resources for people who wanted to restart their business. So we did 8 different webinars, and then we have forms attached to each of the webinars, kind of going over really classic small business questions. You know, how do I avoid taxes, or how do I minimize taxes? How do I hire people? Are they an independent contractor? Are they an employee? Questions like that we go through. And so I dropped the kind of 8 topics that we went through. But again, this is a good kind of online resource that you can always access. And there are forms attached to it if you actually need to take, you know, the ideas into reality. So resources for your enjoyment later. So briefly, what I wanted to go over today, just first things first, I really wanted to spend most of my time on choice of entity, and then a couple of the other questions that Jim forwarded to me that you guys might have about your specific issues.
One question just about the links, and you mentioned there's some template documents that are on the website. Is that the same as the Dropbox link that I think Mike sent me when you and I were on the call with
them? I think so. Yeah. The Dropbox goes to these resources, the free legal forms. The YouTube ones are separately accessible. And I think the link is through that YouTube account.
Okay. Cause I noticed in the Dropbox, there are a lot of forms, right? So, should we just focus on the ones that start with Hawaii or reference Hawaii in that whole list?
I'll go over that. Like, why would I pick Delaware? Yeah, I'll go over that.
Thank you.
Okay, so any questions on the agenda or anything that you want me to dive into more before we go into detail? Cool. Well, again, stop me if you want me to dive in deeper. So first things first, this is kind of just a typical slide. You guys are already a little bit deeper into business planning and actually looking at the technical aspects of your job. But you know, are you ready to be an entrepreneur? What is your idea and how are you going to support it? So we always like to frame the discussion with those. But since you're a little bit more mature than that, we'll move on to choice of entity. So I listed, why would you have a separate legal entity? You know, I think a lot of small businesses, it's seen as a humbug, right? Like, wow, I have to do a separate tax return. I have to do all these filings with the state. What's in it for me? So the main reasons why people like to have a separate business entity is legal protection, right? This is America. People get sued. Having a separate legal entity ensures that your personal finances are safe. So that really is typically the primary reason why you would want to have a separate legal entity. Other key factors that go into, okay, well, what type of legal entity should I do? Is one of your goals to attract investors? Do you want to have people investing capital in you? If so, that might impact what type of entity you choose. What are the tax implications? Some corporations require separate tax returns. Some entities don't. What makes sense for you and for your personal growth? Who makes the decisions? In some cases, you want to entrust somebody else to run it day to day. In some cases, you want to be king in the castle. Which entity type is going to allow you the type of flexibility and oversight that you want for your business? And lastly, you know, can the business entity accommodate your personal growth goals? If you want to be, you know, a mom and pop that sells to people in Hawaii, that's a very different business growth goal than I want to go public. I want to have the next, I want to have the next big thing. I want to do a big kind of tech startup. Depending upon, you know, what your personal goals are, that's going to impact your choice of entity. So I put an image of, these are not all of the entity choices, but they're the ones that we typically see most regularly. And for small businesses, the LLC, the S corporation, and the C corporation really are the ones that we see the most of. So I'm going to focus today's discussion on those three entity types. If you want to talk about one of these other ones, you know, partnerships or sole proprietorships, let me know and we can go into it. But really, I think the primary benefit is going to be coming from an LLC, S corporation, or C corporation. LLCs are probably the most common entity type that we see with small businesses, primarily because you get to do pretty much whatever you want as a small business owner. You get to make a lot of the decisions and control how operations are run. And so most businesses like that. In the pros category, it's a pass-through entity, so it's not separately taxed. That is, and especially if it's just you, if you're a single member entity, it's even easier. You can report it on your own personal income tax report return. So it's a pass-through entity, not subject to separate taxation. The flexibility is what most people like. You get to set the terms on what voting looks like, when you get paid, how you make decisions. And so a lot of small businesses tend to like that. There are no eligibility requirements. I'll go more into that on the S corporation, which has a lot of eligibility requirements, but here there are none. And importantly, you get that personal liability shield. So let's say, you know, you sell a product and, you know, there's an issue with it. Maybe there's mold on it and somebody gets sick. What you want with an LLC, you want them to sue the entity, right? Not you personally. And so having that LLC means that the entity will protect you. And as long as you're treating the entity like a separate legal entity, your personal finances, you know, your house, your car, all of that is protected. So that's, again, that personal liability shield is really an important part of why you want to have an entity. On the cons, not suitable for venture capital financing. So I mentioned earlier, do you want to get investors? LLCs aren't the most popular vehicle for people to invest in. So if that is one of your goals, maybe not the right entity choice. It's difficult to issue equity awards. So to give away like stock or ownership interests can be challenging, not impossible, but it just takes a lot of legal legwork. Complexity, because it's flexible, it can be complex, right? Because you get to do whatever you want, it just takes a lot to document that. So that's why it can be complex. And then there's no, you can't go public with it. But so again, just kind of frame this with, you know, what are your personal goals for growth? And then that should help you to figure out, okay, do these pros and cons apply to me? Any questions on LLCs?
I do, if no one else does.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So the personal liability shield, is that, I mean, I've heard the phrase over the years, piercing the corporate veil, right? Is if you're mm-hmm. a single member LLC and it's really you and yes. only you, and it's like, so you're really just setting up an LLC in order to shield yourself from liability. Yep. Is that, can that be pierced? Can that all go away? Are there certain things that you need to make sure you have in place, like separate financials?
Exactly. I think the rule of thumb is if you treat the business as though it's a separate legal entity, the law will treat it as though it's separate. So, for example, as soon as you start your own LLC, you should get your own LLC bank account, right? When, if commingling assets, you know, like cashing a check on behalf of the company into your own personal bank account, that's a big no-no, right? You're not really treating the entity as though it's separate. And so that's the perfect opportunity for to pierce the corporate veil. You can't, obviously, there are certain things that the entity can't protect you from, right? If you punch someone in the face, you can't say, oops, it was the LLC that did it. But as long as you are acting on behalf of the business, so when you sign contracts, let's say you get into a vendor agreement, make sure that the agreement is between the LLC and the vendor, not you personally and the vendor. Just treat the business as though it's separate, and then the law should follow accordingly.
And maybe this is an accountant question, but I believe that with an LLC, you can still file under the one tax return and do it as a separate schedule and not have to do an entirely new return for the LLC. But
exactly. It's a pass-through entity, so you don't, it doesn't get taxed separately.
Yeah. So not too hot, horrible either. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. It's not so cumbersome. I think, you know, we'll get into C corporations. That's when you get that double layer of taxation, which for most people, it's a deal killer. Any other questions on LLC? Cool. All right, let's move on. S corporations, again, it's a pass-through entity, but you get that personal liability shield. S corporations are a subcategory of corporations, so they come with a lot of restrictions. There are some benefits to them, so it's a quid pro quo. S corporations, actually all corporations, that's probably the oldest entity form and they've been around for a while. The S selection is something that you do when you create the entity and you agree to abide by certain rules. The eligibility requirements are that, you know, you're a natural person, there's a limitation on how many stockholders you can have, but the benefit is that you get that pass-through entity. And you can limit some of the self-employment taxes that are owed. And so that it's a dance to do with your accountant. But we see a lot of LLCs. Let me back up. Sorry, let me back up to the beginning. So when you create an entity, you form it under state law. For purposes of federal tax law, however, you can elect to be taxed as different things. So you can you can form as an LLC and elect to be taxed as an S corporation. That is what a lot of businesses choose to do because you can eliminate some self-employment taxes, and I can go over that when I go over the taxes phase. As corporations, because there are stockholder eligibility requirements, investors don't typically like it. And so, again, it depends on what your personal goals are for your business. Do you want to attract financing? If so, the S corporation is probably not the right vehicle for you. That's in contrast to the C corporation. Investors love C corporations. And so when you see big companies, they often are C corporations. It gives them the flexibility to do an IPO. And for sophisticated investors, it's like speaking English in the business world. Everyone speaks it. And so it really is kind of the go-to entity type. If you are high growth, we can talk about C corporations. But for most small businesses, because there's that double layer of taxation, it's not a particularly popular choice. When I say double taxation, I mean that, so let's say the corporation makes money, it's taxed at the corporate tax rate. When a distribution is made to you as the owner, as a stockholder, you also get taxed. So there's two layers of taxation at the company and then at your level. So because of that, it really isn't too popular. So if there's someone on this call that does want to talk about C corporations, I'm more than happy to go into details. But typically, the barrier to entry is that double taxation. So if it's not of interest to you guys, I'm happy to skip over it and kind of focus on what would be more helpful for you.
And I think, yeah, it seems like it's not kind of the scope of this small farmer group that we tend to be. It's like, am I right in saying that the benefits to S and C Corp are on the tax or getting the investors level?
Investors, yeah. If you want to have investors, it's definitely something. I can go into what I mentioned earlier. So what we see a lot with small businesses is they want to be an LLC for purposes for state law, gives them flexibility, and you can kind of set the rules. And then for federal tax purposes, they elect to be taxed as an S corporation. Then they can eliminate some of the self-employment taxes that might be owed on profits of the company. And so, again, my recommendation is an appointment with an attorney, and we can really talk through what your issues are. And then we can make a recommendation that's a little bit more tailored than, I'm kind of keeping it at the service level.
Someone was also asking about partnerships. Was that another, that sounds like another potentially common one for a small business?
There are partnerships. Partnerships in some cases don't give you the personal liability shield. So because of that, it's not something that we typically recommend. You want to protect your personal finances. There are ways to limit that, but there are also some limitations on partnerships. So we can, if that is something that someone wants to, there are some industries where partnerships are kind of the go-to. Like I was a partner at my law firm, right? There are industries where partnerships do make sense. So just schedule an appointment and we can kind of talk through the nuances as it applies to your particular business and what your partners are and what kind of exposure and liability you're willing to have. That's a question that we often get is how do I have a nonprofit arm or should I have a parent entity with a bunch of different LLCs for different businesses? I mean, there are a lot of businesses have a philanthropic arm. Those generally have to be pretty carefully negotiated or documented. As a nonprofit, typically what you're going for is a tax exemption, right? And so those tend to be a little bit more regulated because you're getting these kind of freebies on tax. And so I think the documentation for those tends to be a little bit heavier just because you don't want to be claiming taxable activities as non-taxable events. And so it's just a little bit, but it certainly is a thing that can be structured. And so again, it's really up to kind of what your operations look like. Some businesses have, let's say they have a operating farm and then they have maybe a food product. And sometimes they want to keep it separate just so they keep the businesses separate and they have different partners and different distributions. So we can talk about the relationship between the companies if you guys schedule an additional appointment.
Well, and I think that's a common theme we're seeing with a lot of the folks in the cohort is, produce and selling ag products is the main business line. But then I think many want to do an educational component, right, which would be workshops. Actually, I'd say half or more of the cohort. And it seems like a theme, right? I think part of it's trying to make sure you spread the word about the benefit of local produce, but it's also and teaching some of those skills. But I think in most cases, folks are thinking of doing that. So I think what we've been talking about with the business team is the LLC, if you were if just for simplification, right? The LLC would be the farm name, and then there'd be a subsidiary that a subsidiary for the educational component that would apply for the 501 nonprofit status. Is that seems pretty straightforward to you, or it, just as a starting point.
Okay. Yep. As long as it's documented appropriately, that sounds appropriate.
Thanks.
It's also, I feel like I have like such a lawyer like liability, but it really is something that like guides a lot of our decision making. And when you have two very discrete business operations, you know, the operation of a farm and, you know, selling a product, let's say that it's just catastrophic issue on the product. They're all contaminated and you sell it and everyone gets sick and there's all these potential losses. The benefit of having a separate business for the food product company is that the food product company gets sued and maybe has all this liability. But if the farm is under a separate entity, it doesn't get touched. If you have very disparate products and you want to protect, you know, one from the other, for whatever reason, it doesn't have to be, it creates that separation. So you protect the assets of each business, even if you're the one that's ultimately running both of them. So anyway, that's a really general overview of Choice of Entity. Please, you know, call us, come talk to us, and we can, you know, kind of walk through some of the nuances. And again, if you get to the point where you want to actually start drafting documents, you know, we have a bunch of LLC templates on our website. Some of them are Hawaii entities. We also have Delaware entities. The only reason that's up there is that, you know, this is our database for all small businesses, particularly those that are high growth, those that really want to go public and get a bunch of, you know, venture capital investment. Delaware entities it facilitates that type of investment. And so those are up there for them. But for, I think, your purposes, the Hawaii entity probably makes the most sense. Other legal considerations. So I think some of the questions that were posed related to like, what kind of contracts and agreements do I need for my business? And I listed some very typical agreements, right? Vendor, customer, partners, non-disclosure. As a small business, you kind of have to use your discretion when deciding like which contracts do I really need to have? And when I do have contracts, like how serious are they? I've seen small businesses, you know, just Frankenstein together a 20-page document and give it to somebody. And like that's kind of scary to be on the receiving end for. Like, do I need to sign this 20-page agreement? To kind of pick and choose what makes sense to you. We have some forms on our website and we can help you draft. You know, if you constantly get into vendor agreements, maybe you want to have one really good form that you can, you know, plug and play the different names of the vendors into it. So we can assist with that. But it obviously helps to, you don't need to have a big, thick contract, but it does help to have even just a back of napkin, high level, what are the business terms? How much am I paying you? When am I paying you? What am I delivering? Those kinds of things. It's easier to pre-agree upon it and have it in writing versus finding about it after the fact. So if I could make a recommendation, just really high level is probably a good starting point. For those of you that are doing online business, I think we have some privacy policies, terms and conditions, legal disclaimers that you can use. So those are on our website.
So all the ones that you list here should be a template of some sort on the website?
It helps. Yeah, it's a start. It's a start. We can always help you tailor, but those are good to have. Taxes. So all businesses are going to be subject to certain taxes. You know, all businesses except for partnerships have to file an income tax return, for example, right? Depending upon what kind of business you have and what kind of industry you're operating in, it's going to impact what kind of taxes you have to pay. In addition, if you're doing online business or if you're selling products to other states, you might owe taxes in that other state as well. So unfortunately, each state has its own set of rules. Sometimes you owe taxes if you... I put a graphic there, double check it when you actually start doing business, but it's at least a helpful kind of overview of when do I have to start paying taxes in a different state. You know, green is if you transact 100K or more. That's the threshold. So if it's under 100K with residents of, you know, state of the people in of the states in green, then you probably don't have to. If you exceed 100K, then you're going to be subject to their taxes. So just something to be aware of once you start doing business interstate.
And it looks like green is the lowest level, right? From can't quite
green
read
is
that
the lowest level.
Yeah.
Well, green, and then the blues are all 100K. The blues set a 200 transaction limit, so even if you have a bunch of little ones, it should be okay.
That's a pretty cool little graph.
It's helpful. It's irritating that every state is different. It just puts the burden on the person doing business, right? To check, especially if you're doing online business, you just have to know each state. So.
And if you get to that level, I guess that's a good problem to have, right? If you're selling.
Yeah, like, oh, shucks, I'm doing 500K worth of revenue in Texas, darn.
And yeah. I know there are outfits that'll actually take that on and just you give them your numbers and they go through all the hassle of the paperwork, state by state, unique stuff.
Yeah, it's some websites, like if you use them as your platform, have, you know, this type of compliance built into it. So it just depends on if you're, you know, if you guys are going to be doing a lot of online business, that might be something to just think about, you know, which platform you sign up with and if you can unload this type of work onto them so that you can focus on what you're really good at. And then the last thing that I have to talk about are licenses and permits. You know, so we're talking about kind of the business registration. When you set up your business, you know, if you do it in Hawaii, the DCCA, so the Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs, is the state agency that regulates all businesses. They have like a wizard where when you set up your business, you can also set up your tax accounts and then they're linked. And so that's a pretty convenient tool to have. Other licenses you might think about are whether you want to have a trade name. People often think of that as like a DBA. So do you want to have your farm, but doing business as, you know, Farm XYZ or whatever. That's another thing that you can add on when you're going through that wizard. If you are employing people, you might need other licenses or need to comply with other laws. That's why I put employer requirements and then any occupational licenses that you might have. Again, if you're doing business in other states, you might have to qualify to do business there. It's a slightly different analysis than the tax analysis, but it's the same kind of feel, right? Do you have a physical presence there? Should you be qualifying to do business there? For example, if you have an employee that lives in California, probably best if your company registers to do business in California, same as if you have a warehouse there or some kind of physical nexus. There were specific questions that about camper vans. And so I in my day job, I actually ran into DPPL about this. So I just cut and pasted their guidance as to when you can do camper vans, what kind of permit you need, what area you have to be in. And again, I'll send copies of the slides so that you guys can access this. But this was DPP's guidance on camper vans and whether or not you needed to get a conditional use permit. And whether you were eligible for one. And then the last question that I got from Jim in advance was food trucks. So I listed some of the licenses and permits that would be required, and then the city and then the state respectively both have resources on mobile food establishments. So, and you know, what permits would be needed? Do you need to be tied to a commercial kitchen for food safety and all of that? So,
yeah, and I think food trucks in particular might have been like if you there's so many food truck vendors right these days, so it seems like if you have an arrangement, maybe it should be a contract based on one of your previous slides, but if you have an arrangement with a food truck that comes to your property for certain events, let's say, it sounds like they need to do all these things. You don't need to, but you need to. Maybe your contract with them says that they need to.
That they're responsible, because you don't want to be stuck complying for them. So just being very clear about expectations upfront is generally a good thing.
I did have one question back on, you know, related to business registration and DBA question mark. So DBA, could you just talk to that a little bit more? I mean, why would I want? Because if I go on and I register my business, right, and would I need a DBA on top of that? Because, no. You know, right? But
you don't need it. Some people like having a separate DBA. Like, for example, for some reason, that's the name of a business locally. They do businesses. So, you know, is their trade name, but their actual corporate name is.
Okay. So, yes. And you don't
they
have
a bunch of different trade names that they operate under. So it just gives you flexibility.
But you don't need to use,
no.
Like, you need to register deep as a business registration because you've done the other.
If you were to register it as a business, so here, let me actually share my screen and I'll go to the DCCA's website. So this is the DCCA's website. For those of you who haven't started a business, can you see my screen?
Yep.
Okay, so for those of you who haven't started a business yet, I would recommend going into this as a database and checking to see, is my business name available? So let's say I want to open up. You search, and it'll show you, okay, somebody has already registered the name.
In Hawaii.
So when you click on it, in Hawaii, right? You click on it, and you see, okay, the registrant is this company. You can click on them, and then you can see, oh, they actually own a bunch of different trade names. You can see who the owners are or who the officers are, all their different trade names. So it's a really good resource for you as you're trying to figure out, what should I name my business? Then you'll find out if there's any competing businesses. It's better to know it upfront than to, you know, spend a bunch of money branding your business only to find out that someone else already owns it. So that this is a good resource. This has all of the state of Hawaii businesses and trade names. If you are going to operate on a national level, consider whether you need to get a federal trademark. And so this is the federal trademark registration system. You can do the same thing. You can search to see if there are any competing marks. And so we can do the same. And then it'll pull up all of the registered across the nation. You can click on it and see that. And okay, it's registered to the same company. And this gives them nationwide protection, whereas the Hawaii registration will give you Hawaii registration.
And tell me if you agree. I feel like the setting up a trademark is a fairly simple process. I mean,
yes.
It's not too horrible or expensive if you wanted to do that.
Yeah, no, the setting up a... So trademark registrations in the state of Hawaii, I think, are $50 for 5 years. So it's like a 1 or 2 page form that you submit to DCCA. It's pretty straightforward. And so if that's really important to your brand, that's your name, I think it's a worthwhile stake to put in the ground to say, this is my name. Nobody else can steal it. I'm claiming it as my own.
And you can put
the
that
federal registration is a little bit more expensive. I think it's like $250 for every class of goods or services. So it's a little bit bigger of a bite, but it does give you national protection. And I think that one's for a period of 10 years.
And do you need to do both if you want? Like, you have to do, if you do federal, do you need to do Hawaii?
It's a belt and suspenders method. It's better to do both, but federal will give you nationwide protection.
If you want the R with the circle around it, right?
Yeah.
For registered trademark, it has to be federal, right?
Correct.
Liability waivers, right? Like, just as a simple example, everyone signs liability waivers to be part of this program.
Right.
Are they garbage?
They're contracts. They're legally enforceable.
Yeah. So. But still,
I mean, not if you're like twisting my arm and making me sign it, right? If I can prove that I signed it under duress or whatever, there are obviously exceptions. But as a general rule, yes, they're enforceable.
But again, don't punch anybody in the face.
Yeah. You know, I think the strength of the liability waiver, particularly if there is going to be like a hazardous activity, come on my farm and I'll teach you how to use pesticides, right? Like those kinds of activities. If you can disclose in advance, like, hey, this is the type of activity that this is intended to cover, you are accepting the risk of that might strengthen it. Just that, you know, it's very explicit and very clear, and it discloses the risks involved.
I mean, because we're all on farms in Hawaii, right? And it's uneven ground. We're on an active volcano and on this island. I mean, it's just not easy to get around. So is that implied if you're doing a farm tour, or you need to spell that all out in your liability waiver?
I mean, I would spell out at least some, you know, you accept a certain amount of risk, like, you know, spraining your ankle because of uneven ground or something like that. Even if you have volunteers coming on site to do, you know, a work day or something, it's I would recommend getting a liability waiver from each of your attendees. If they're underage, having their parents sign off, things like that. You know, I would probably look to see, like, what are other people in the industry doing, particularly like the larger entities. If you can kind of piggyback off of the research that they've done or that the forms that, that they've created, that's probably a good first start versus, you know, each of you doing a tremendous amount of legal research and crafting your own crafting your own forms. You know what? I have no point in reinventing the wheel, particularly if there's a Hawaii entity that you're like, okay, they're doing it right. That might be someone to ask, because state law might differ too.
Yeah, I'm thinking like some of the bigger outfits. Maybe I can try reaching out to some of the bigger farms, right? Because that's, or ones that have more people coming through them. That might be a good start. I can see what I can come up with there.
If not, that might be a good, you know, something that, you know, you age and we, I'm, you know, I, that might be something that we can collaborate on too through the Business Law Corps. You know, I think we're always trying to find a way to engage our attorneys. And that might be an interesting project for us to work on. Can we do, you know, Hawaii state law research to craft, you know, guidance and helpful forms for you guys, so that you're not stuck litigating, you know, something that really isn't at the key of your core competency. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think more and more from, you know, for a variety of UH things that I work on, I've talked to a lot of ag producers on the islands, right? And I think that would be certainly valuable. I think more and more are moving towards a couple things to try to stay profitable, stay, keep farming. And one is farm tours.
Totally.
Workshops,
diversify commercial offerings,
yeah. And also Airbnb kind of structures, right? And I think you know, some of the questions you saw in that were asked ahead of this, which are maybe not your Kuleana, are probably zoning issues, right? More zoning issues, yeah.
Yeah, if you have any legal questions, it can be related to choice of entity or any kind of business transactional issue. Feel free to raise it with us. We're happy to help. We have a volunteer corps of. But mostly, most of the large firms, and so even if it's employment or tax or business related, hopefully we'll be able to support you. And so the HTDC one, we often have no appointments. I would call them and see if you can get on the schedule. Each, so there's a rotation of maybe like 8 or 10 of us. So every week it's a different attorney. That actually might be a benefit to you to have a different set of eyes, and in particular, if you know that you have, like, okay, I have a really tax heavy question, can you try to schedule me on the week that the tax specialist is there? They usually try to be accommodating. If you have an actual document that you want us to review, send it to them. Some attorneys will review in advance, some of them won't, but at least maybe you can kind of talk through the issues and they can actually look at the wording of the contract.
It causes me to ask, Kat, do you know anyone that's has any experience with Kamehameha Schools Bishop Estates contracts, because they're pretty common?
Oh, they're beasts, aren't they? Almost every real estate attorney has had to deal with one of those at one point in our career. We've all seen them. What you want to do is talk to someone who regularly works with KS leases.
If we connect to those websites and those 30-minute sessions, is that the way to go, or to start?
Start there. I would start there. If you have specific questions, just email me. I generally do most of the back of house stuff for BLC, so I can get you in contact with the right people as well.
For all of us, I really appreciate it. I appreciate you letting me record it. I know a couple people weren't able to make it, so they're really great. They'll be really grateful to have this as well.
Yeah, hopefully they're good resources. It was nice to meet you all. Good luck with everything. You'll have a lot of hats to wear. I really respect your ability to jump from farm to office to, okay, today I'm an accountant, today I'm an HR expert. It's a lot. So I have a lot of tremendous respect for farmers and entrepreneurs.
It goes back to that, do you want to be an entrepreneur slide that we skipped past? But yeah, I think we're all committed.
We thank Kat for sharing her mana'o and addressing some common Hawaii agriculture producer legal questions and concerns, as well as providing some links to templates they can use to address some of their needs. If you are only listening to this, you may want to watch our video version on YouTube to see some of the things referenced, and be sure to check the show notes. If you want to know more about the University of Hawaii's AgConnect program, then listen on for a brief description and use the link in the show notes. Mahalo.
And this quick version is we try to match up host farms and skilled ag technicians to work together for 8 weeks or more, 16 hours a week. And the goal of which is to kind of figure out if they want to work together long-term and what mm-hmm. that might look like. What they've all submitted this morning is a 2-year business plan that shows with financials that shows how that might look for the next 2 years, starting January of 2024. And so those have all been submitted. So we're kind of in the last phase where those are being reviewed. And we have people like Linus Tavares and Eric from GoFarm and Mike from Business Strategies and Hilo. So people that are kind of have a strong financial background that are helping review those as this final piece. And then we're kind of out.
The intention of these podcast series is to create a safe space for respectful and inclusive dialogue with people from across a broad and diverse spectrum involved in growing and making accessible the food we share together. A diversity of voices, perspectives, and experiences can serve to deepen mutual understanding, to spark creative problem solving, and provide insight into the complexities of our agriculture system. If you or listeners have experiences with Hawaii agriculture ecosystem, from indigenous methods, permaculture, smallholder farmers, to large, including multinational agricultural industrial companies, and everywhere in between, and you would like to share your story, please contact us. We welcome your voices and perspectives.